I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the apartment listing. It was a one-bed, one-bath, a spacious updated kitchen, and an in-unit washer and dryer, all for $1,000 a month. Usually apartments like that go for at least $1,300, and that's if it's dingy. When I toured it, it wasn't the cleanest, and certain spots had a putrid smell. The leasing agent promised that it would be clean before I moved in. They said that I might need to do some cleaning myself, but that they would deal with the smell. The agent seemed eager to get someone to move in as soon as possible. It was everything I wanted and, well, under my budget. So I signed the lease and moved in as soon as the leasing agent would let me. On move-in day, the apartment was still pretty dirty. I knew I would have an oasis once I cleaned up that layer of grime, but after a string of poor living situations and bad roommates, I wanted to create a space where I could unwind and relax. Once all my boxes were moved in, I got to cleaning. I started in the kitchen and then moved to the bathroom. When I was cleaning the floor in the bathroom, I discovered one of the rectangle tiles was loose. It wiggled in its mold. I went and got a fork, and I was able to flip it up. To my surprise, there was something nuzzled into the hole. I pulled out a leather-bound notebook with a skull drawn on the cover with what looked like a ballpoint pen. Before I opened the notebook, it felt heavy in my hands. Something about it creeped me out. Like, why go through so much trouble to hide a notebook? As I started to inspect it, I understood why. The book was filled with entries that dated back decades. Each entry was a description of a person. It included their age, approximate height and weight, physical appearance, disposition, routines, and some miscellaneous information. Most entries had a lock of hair taped onto the page. Others had a small necklace or a bracelet. It seemed like a trophy notebook of a serial killer. And I wasn't even being dramatic. I read one entry where the man described how he killed the person. It was too disturbing to repeat, but I'll say it involved skinning the person while they were still alive. I immediately went to the police station to turn it in. Whoever made that journal could still possibly be out there. The police appreciated that it brought it straight to them. I told them where I found it and gave them the number of the leasing agent. The killer must have lived in that apartment at one point or another. The police told me that they would update me if they found anything out. On my way home, I wondered about it. If the killer lived in my apartment at some point, why he would leave his precious murder notebook? Did he live there 5 years ago or a month ago? You would think that the notebook itself would be the first thing you grab as you packed up to move out, but how could you forget it? Did he kill someone in my apartment? Is that why I got it for so cheap? Before returning to the apartment, I stopped at the leasing office to ask questions about the previous tenant. When I walked in, the leasing agent seemed peeved to see me. "You talked to the police?" she asked as I walked in. Yeah, I found something disturbing underneath one of the bathroom tiles, and I had to report it. It was literally the journal of all these people that somebody had killed." "I wish you would have brought this to me first. Cops sniffing around isn't good for business, and it freaks out other tenants." "Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but I thought I was doing the right thing. Can I ask you some questions about the apartment and the previous tenant? This whole thing is kind of freaking me out." The leasing agent shrugged, but I went on to ask questions about it. She explained that he was evicted because his neighbors kept making noise complaints, and some complained about a smell emanating from his apartment. According to her, the guy waited until the very last minute to move out, so they had to throw out a ton of stuff before listing it to be rented. I asked for his name, but she said that she couldn't disclose that to me. She already told the police. "Well, how long has it been since he left?"
"About 2 months," she said.
Although I was satisfied with the information that she gave me, I was still unnerved by the whole thing. I continued unpacking my apartment over the next couple days. I wanted it to feel like home, but I couldn't stop my mind from running horrible scenarios that could have happened there from the previous tenant. It's hard to unwind when you can't stop wondering if a murder took place where you're sitting. It wasn't even a simple murder that could have taken place either. It would have been horrific,
where the killer took their time and inflicted as much pain and terror as possible. Sitting there on my couch, I thought there very well could have been more than just one of these kind of slayings. I couldn't sleep after that, so I decided to spend the night at a hotel. I realized I couldn't stay at a hotel every night because I was locked into a year-long lease. I had to try to make the best of it. My sister is into this new-age spirituality stuff, so she suggested that I try to cleanse the place. She gave me what she used to cleanse her space. I don't know if it worked, but it did help me feel better, to the point where I could sleep there again. A couple nights later, I was awoken by a shattering noise in the middle of the night. I shot up in bed to look around. I heard heavy boots trudging through my living area. I grabbed my phone and hid in the closet behind some empty boxes. I was breathing as quietly as possible, listening to the intruder walk around my place. I heard him move to the bathroom. The intruder grumbled some before letting out what sounded like a loud growl. Then, I heard the mirror shatter. He started trashing the place. He went back out into the living room, and I could hear him throwing things around. I hunched over in the closet, called 911 and told them that there was an intruder. They instructed me to stay on the phone. There I sat behind an empty box in my closet, trying to be as quiet as a madman thrashed through my apartment. Once the killer was satisfied with the damage he caused in my living room, he moved into my bedroom. I stopped breathing. I could see his silhouette through the closet door. He was holding a kitchen knife and started stabbing my mattress. I put my hand over my mouth. He walked up to my closet and ripped the door open. I tried to shrink in the darkness as much as I could. Somehow, I was able to hide well enough that he slammed the closet door and continued. I heard him trudge back through the window that he broke and crawled out. He was gone by the time the police arrived. I could not stay in the apartment after that. Fortunately, the leasing company took pity on me and released me from my lease so I could at least find a new place without any cost. After the police investigated some, they told me that there was, in fact, a serial killer that they had been tracking for 2 years. The journal was a breakthrough for them, and they were able to use it to rope in the FBI for help. Now the man is on the FBI most wanted list. When they heard that he had broken into my apartment to receive his journal, they couldn't believe my luck. I was this close to becoming the freshest diary entry.
My name is Ethan, and I work for a car rental company in Nebraska. It's an okay job, but I'm always dealing with angry customers. I haven't had a vacation in years, but this January, I finally had enough PTO saved up to take a 2-week trip to California. My girlfriend Roxanne and I rented a really nice beach house, and because it was the off-season, it wasn't too expensive. Our first day there was pretty relaxing. I went to a nice restaurant and watched the sunset over the ocean. Then we went back to our place and drank some wine. The next morning, Roxanne slept in while I took a run on the beach. It was still pretty early, so no one was out yet. I got pretty far down the beach before I finally saw someone up ahead. It was a woman around my age, late 20s, with the same red hair as Roxanne. I was about to run past her when she raced toward me. I could tell she was panicking and crying. I pulled out my headphones and asked her what was wrong. "Is your name Ethan?" she asked. I studied her face, trying to see if I knew her from somewhere. She didn't look familiar, but she had similar features to my girlfriend, so I assumed that she might have been one of Roxanne's cousins or something. I told her that my name was Ethan, and then she wrapped me in a big hug. She wouldn't let me go for a long time. I had to politely push her away. "Who are you?" I asked. "You're going to think I'm crazy," she said, "but I promise you I'm not." Then she took a deep breath and told me that she was my daughter. I was so shocked, I laughed out loud. I knew I didn't have a daughter. Even if I did, this woman was much too old to be mine. She had to be mistaken, or maybe she was scamming me. I told her that she had the wrong person and started to back away, but she grabbed my wrist and held me in place. She looked really desperate. She begged for me to hear her out. And then she explained that her name was Madison. She was from 30 years in the future, and she'd traveled back in time to save me. I didn't believe her, of course. Time travel was impossible. But she made me look into her eyes and see that she had the exact same eye color as Roxanne. Besides that, Madison was the name Roxanne and I both liked. It made sense that we'd choose that name for our daughter. I thought about what she had told me. She said that she came back to save me. I asked what she meant by that, and she said that her mom was going to kill me tonight. Before she could go into any details, her eyes widened and she froze. Without saying anything else, she ran off. I felt a hand on my shoulder and spun around to see that Roxanne was right behind me. That was why Madison had to run off. Roxanne didn't get a good look at the woman, so she asked me who it was, and I decided not to tell her the truth. Either Madison was lying and Roxanne would think I was crazy for believing her, or Madison was telling the truth and Roxanne was planning to murder me. Roxanne raised an eyebrow. She could tell that I was hiding something from her, but then she dropped it and told me to walk back with her to the beach house. When we got back inside, I saw that Roxanne had already made breakfast. There was a huge spread of pancakes, eggs, and even some smoothies on the table. Roxanne never cooked at home, so it seemed really uncharacteristic of her. We sat down, and Roxanne just stared at me from across the table until I started eating. I got a very weird vibe. I wished I'd had more time to talk to Madison. She could have told me how Roxanne was planning to kill me. I still didn't believe her story, but I was getting really paranoid. I was starting to wonder if maybe there was poison in my food. "Well?" Roxanne asked. "Are you going to start?" I had no idea how to respond, so I grabbed my fork and just started eating the pancake. It tasted delicious. If it had been poisoned, I definitely couldn't tell. I continued eating, but Roxanne still hadn't taken a bite. She was just staring at me. I was halfway done with my breakfast, and she still hadn't eaten anything. All I could think about was that the idea that my food had been poisoned. She asked me if I liked the meal, and I said yes. She tried to get me to finish everything, but I told her I was done and ran off to the bathroom. Just in case, I forced myself to throw up everything I eat. I knew that it was stupid to be so suspicious of my girlfriend because of some made-up story, but I didn't want to risk it. When we got back out, Roxanne had cleaned up the table. I asked her if she'd eaten any of her own food, and she said, "A bit." I couldn't tell if she was lying. After that, we went out to the balcony overlooking the ocean. Roxanne leaned against the edge and invited me to stand with her. I slowly approached, but I kept imagining her pushing me over the edge. Maybe that was how she'd kill me. She kept encouraging me to stand close to her. I tried to act casual, but she could sense that I was on edge. She asked me what was wrong. I responded with the question, "Do you still love me?" She laughed and said yes. I looked into her eyes and believed her. For the rest of the day, I forced myself to forget about Madison. She was just some crazy person who had done some research on me and then made up that time travel story as some sort of sick joke. That had to be it. The fact that she looked so much like my girlfriend was just a coincidence. For the rest of the night, I was still on edge, but I forced myself to stop being paranoid. Roxanne and I went to bed pretty early, but I woke up in the middle of the night. I went downstairs to get a drink when I noticed a note on the floor. Someone had slid it from under the front door. It said, "Get out, now." I knew that Madison had left it for me. All my fear and paranoia came back at that moment. I knew it was irrational, but I needed to get out of there. If Roxanne was going to kill me that night, then I'd stay away until the morning. I quietly grabbed my keys, got in my car, and drove to the other end of the beach. I spent the rest of the night walking around alone, trying to sort through my thoughts. Once the sun came up, I drove back to the house. When I got back inside, everything was very silent. At first, I thought that Roxanne was still asleep, but when I went up to the bedroom, I saw her lying dead in a pool of blood. Someone had come in during the night and killed her while I was gone. I called the police and spent the next few hours trying to explain what had happened. They didn't believe my time travel story, but I could tell that they also didn't think I was the killer. I was so shocked that I couldn't stop crying. One of the officers just kept asking me questions. After I described Madison for the third time, the officer pulled out her phone and showed me a picture. "Is this the person that you saw?" she asked. I couldn't believe it. She had Madison's picture on the screen. "Yes," I said, "that's my future daughter." "That's not your daughter, you fool," the cop said. "That's Roxanne's sister. She's been locked up for 3 years after attempting to murder Roxanne." Roxanne never told me that she had a sister, but now everything made sense. Of course this woman would look like Roxanne. She wasn't a time traveler. She just made up that story so she could trick me into leaving my girlfriend alone. Roxanne died because I had believed her ridiculous story. The police promised that they'd track her down, but they still haven't found her. I miss Roxanne every day, and I feel terrible that my own paranoia had indirectly allowed her to be murdered.
When Lisa told me she heard strange noises from underneath the floor of our apartment, it was hard to believe her. It was a very new apartment, and we had spent thousands of dollars in renovation, taking it from the rundown construction that it was before and turning it into something more beautiful that we could all live in. Perhaps it was for this reason that I did not believe her, even though I should have. Unlike Lisa, I did not come from a wealthy background. I lived with my mother in a dirt-poor neighborhood and a project building that houses more people than we care to know. Moving into an estate where we did not share walls with neighbors was a dream for me after college, and I got to share this new apartment and this new life with Lisa. It was like a fairy tale that my childhood eyes would have been proud to see, but Lisa insisted that she heard noises from the floor of our home. "Lisa, we live in a bungalow, and there are no houses underneath us. We have a garage and no basement." I resisted her as much as I could, and sometimes we would fight over it, but Lisa never wavered. So I thought to ask around if anyone else had experienced such challenges in their homes when they first moved into their new apartments. Neatly tarred roads, scarcely ever littered, like the ghetto homes I lived in all my life. I would kiss my teeth in annoyance that Lisa was forcing me to think that getting the new apartment was a bad idea. The neighborhood was so exclusive that we hardly ever saw our neighbors. But on the day I saw Randall, I knew I had to ask the question. Randall was a quaint fellow who lived for loud foreign music. So when I saw him shave his lawn with huge shears instead of a mower, it didn't startle me. I chalked it up to a cultural preference. "Hey, Randall, do you sometimes hear noises from the floor of your building?" I asked after I eased myself with the situation. Randall seemed puzzled and went over the question I asked with his own lips wordlessly for a while before telling me that he had never a reason to suspect that there were noises from underneath the floor of his house. He chuckled and said the music he played was always so loud anyway. In my head, it was settled, and Lisa was only making a fuss over the new apartment. I told him that it was just Lisa's worry, and he laughed some more. "Women," he snickered. Randall and I bantered about sports and life. He told me that, just like me, he claimed that the life he had now was an upgrade from what he used to have. South Africa was a strange place for him, even though he was in South Africa all his life. Moving to America was an easy choice. Randall and I concluded that America had its perks, and we must concern ourselves with enjoying it. Then I left him and thought nothing of the incident, until that strange night came. It had to be past 1 a.m., or sometime so far into dusk, when I heard Lisa scream from somewhere in the house, a shriek so loud that my heart snapped and I jerked up from the bed. I still struggled with sleep, but Lisa's desperate cry echoing around the house made my head spin. I rushed from the room and straight after the noise into the kitchen, where I was met with the shock of my life. The first emotion that washed over me was utter confusion. "Randall!" I barked, shook to my bones by the sight of our neighbor in our kitchen. A neighbor in one's kitchen is not wholly a bad-sounding idea, but the circumstances around it made me numb.
The steel reflected light into my eyes. He had Lisa in his hands, and I was terrified to my bones what he would do to her. "David, help me!" Lisa cried in horror, and I noticed a gash on the side of her face. The blood on the wound had clotted and did not bleed as heavily to be fatal. Randall looked at me with a menacing glare in his eyes. "When I was much younger, I would do your wife right here while you watching, slit her throat and walk out that door," Randall said in the most horrifying string of words to hit my ears. The most I would get was a fine from the judge. My spinning head spun faster. I didn't understand. The wind blowing into the kitchen blew even colder, and the hair on my skin stood up. I looked around the kitchen, and my eyes fell upon the huge hole on the floor that Randall must have crawled out of. My heart sank from my chest to my stomach. Perhaps he knew I had seen it, and laughed at my realization. To impress it in, he put his knife on Lisa's arm and slashed it. Lisa fell to the floor in tears. Did 5 years in prison and can't get a job. For what? Killing? I loved it, but it ruined my life. I will get my lick back, he said, and my heart pounded at my chest like 1,000 drums going off all at the same time. He grabbed her hair, and I stopped thinking. The terror in her cry when he placed his knife on her throat. I had no doubt in my heart that this psychopath was in frenzy and would kill her. I was so afraid that my whole body was shaking, and I knew that I just could not simply watch him kill Lisa. Adrenaline pumped through my veins, propelled me forward, and I jumped him. He turned his knife mid-swing to stab me. The knife ate into my forearm, but I wasn't thinking. I wrestled the handle with him forcefully and pulled the blade out of his hand. Then, turned on him and stabbed him deep in the chest. Randall held his wound and stumbled backwards, choking on blood as he fell to the floor. Looking around the room, Lisa wasn't there. I called out for her, but she came back with her phone in her hand. "The police will be here any minute," she said, rushing into my arms. The cops did not take their time and came as soon as they could, and the emergency services came moments later to take us to the hospital for medical care. I apologized to Lisa for not listening to her, and she forgave me. But it was the most horrifying night of my life, one which I knew I could not afford a repeat of. I never thought that something as innocuous as Instagram could bring so much terror into my life. It all started when I followed a user named Mystery Man. He had a private account and his bio had one word, curiosity. Such discreetness caught my attention and my curiosity got aroused to know more. Despite my better judgment, I requested to follow him and he accepted within minutes. I should have known better. The account had no posts and no followers, but I was intrigued and my curiosity got the better of me. I soon found myself chatting with Mystery Man regularly. He was intelligent, witty, and had a great sense of humor, but there was an air of mystery surrounding him, and I could never put my finger on what made me feel uneasy. One day he asked me to meet him in person. I was hesitant, but he was persistent. He promised that it would be a harmless meeting, and I could always leave if I felt uncomfortable. After much persuasion, I finally agreed to meet him at a local coffee shop. What could happen in a public place? Plus, I didn't want to spoil my chance if he ended up being a great person. As I walked into the coffee shop on the agreed date, I saw him sitting in a corner booth. He looked normal, with a friendly smile on his face. I could recognize him because after we started talking, we shared pictures once or twice. We talked for a while and he seemed genuinely interested in getting to know me.
I answered his questions with as much honesty and tried to get to know him too. But then he started asking me strange questions. He wanted to know my deepest fears, my childhood traumas, and my innermost desires. I started to feel uneasy. I thought he would stop if I showed my discomfort, but it only probed him further, and he ignored all the signs I showed. When I tried to change the subject, he came back to it. I knew I had enough, so I decided to leave. As I got up to go, he grabbed my arm and whispered, "Don't go. You have no idea what you're getting into." I jerked my arm away and ran out of the coffee shop, feeling a mix of fear and confusion. I didn't know what to do. Even though I wanted to block him on Instagram, I decided not to. Days passed and Mystery Man started texting me again. He said he was sorry for scaring me and wanted to make it up to me. He said he had a surprise for me and asked me to come to a scheduled spot in the outskirts of the city. As always, curiosity gripped my wrist, and I agreed to see him. I wouldn't lie if I told you that his build and handsome face and chiseled jaw had a way of making a young lady want more. If he was willing to be a better person, I wanted to give him another chance. When I arrived at the spot he suggested, I saw him standing beside a car. He asked me to get in, and I did. As soon as I sat down, he locked the door and drove off at breakneck speed. I screamed at the top of my lungs and told him to stop, but he just laughed and said, "Relax, we're just going on a little adventure." I realized then that I was in serious trouble. I knew I shouldn't have trusted someone like him. What was I supposed to do now? He drove for what seemed like hours until we reached an old abandoned mansion. He led me inside and showed me around. At this point, I was shivering from head to toe. My head was spinning and I could barely feel my legs. Doom was all I could think of. I didn't know what was coming next. As we were exploring, I heard strange noises coming from one of the rooms. He led me to the room, and I saw a group of teenagers huddled in a corner crying. I screamed at him, demanding to know what he was doing to them. He just laughed and said, "Don't worry, they're just part of my collection." I was horrified. I realized then that he was a psychopath, and I needed to get out of there, fast. What was I supposed to do? How was I going to do it? I didn't even know my way around. Tears formed in my eyes, but I stopped myself from shedding them. I tried to make a run for it, but he caught me and dragged me back to the room. He locked the door and said, "You're not going anywhere. You're part of my collection now." For days, I was trapped in that room, along with the rest of these people. We had no food, no water, no way to escape. Mystery Man would come in every day and torture us in ways I can't describe. I thought this was the end of it, but I started to engage with the others, since I was the newest, and got them to think of a way we could find an escape. It became easy when we noticed the window that supplied light to the room. One day, when our oppressor was out, with the help of the others, I managed to escape through the window. I ran as fast as I could, and I thought I would never find help. A random car passed by. The occupants of the car were traveling who lost their way. With the events of past days, I was skeptical at first, but decided to use their help and eventually reached the police station. I told the police everything and they followed me back to the mansion. The police investigation revealed that the Mystery Man had been using Instagram to lure boys and girls into his trap. He had been active for years, preying on innocent victims and keeping them trapped in that mansion. The teenagers I had seen were just a few of his victims, and there were many more out there who had suffered at his hands. The policemen released the teenagers and gathered all the evidence they could find. The search for Mystery Man began, but he was never found. I lived in fear. I was sure that his other victims lived in fear too. We were at his mercy if he ever showed up again.
The victory came when, some weeks later, the police actually managed to track down Mystery Man when they discovered another one of his Instagram accounts. He was arrested and sentenced to death. His death brought closure to his victims and their families, but his legacy lives on. A reminder that there are evil people in this world who will stop at nothing to fulfill their twisted desires. I still have nightmares about that experience. I can never forget the sight of all of us huddled in the fear. The sound of Mystery Man's laughter as he tortured us, and feeling hopelessness. Looking back, I realized how foolish I was to trust someone I met online. I should have been more careful, but my curiosity got the better of me. I learned a harsh lesson, one that I will never forget.